Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for coming to listen to Thrive's very first podcast. Woo-hoo, that's the applause sign. I am Nia Brantley, also known as Nia the Artist, and I have the amazing, wonderful, talented Mr. Aaron Adams here with me. Aaron, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastically. Thank you for asking. It's a beautiful day. I'm actually in Denver, Colorado at the moment.
Oh, nice.
So I'm enjoying being near the Rockies and looking at
some beautiful views.
Absolutely. I'm really, really zen today. So it's a good day for the podcast.
Perfect. So just to tell everyone a little bit about Thrive. Thrive is, in a nutshell, a total wellness program geared towards dancers, actors, painters, singers, directors, any type of creative that is out there. We are here for you. Thrive also stands for the hardworking, resilient, innovative, viable entrepreneur. So we're going to kind of speak from that vein today. And let's thrive together on this combo, Aaron.
Absolutely.
All right. So first thing, just tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from? What do you do? What you're working on right now? Let's get to know you.
Sure thing. So I am originally from the Bronx, New York. I grew up living in the Bronx, but going to elementary school, middle school, and high school in Harlem. So Harlem is where I identify as home. And, you know, my entire childhood exists in Harlem. So that's where I have like the most memories. And I work as, so I'm an entrepreneur. And I work for myself, and I have clients who I do work with, and I my work revolves around tour management and personal assistance to high profile individuals. So outside of the touring world, the company that I run trains or identifies the right individuals who have a heart for the entertainment industry and want to be able to serve people in power in the entertainment industry. We identify those people, we bring them into our program, our apprenticeship program, we train them on how to operate as a personal assistant to high profile individuals. And then we source them out to clients as needed for, you know, short periods of time, long-term permanent positions, consultant positions, whatever have you. And and it's a unique offering because most celebrities tend to hire who they know, or they reach out to their network to figure out who's available and who's interested. And it does not necessarily mean that person is qualified to serve in the capacity that's necessary. And So I saw that as a need. And given my background, I have an extensive background in entertainment administration. And I've, you know, been able to work with a number of, you know, high profile organizations and high profile individuals. That just kind of allowed me the opportunity to maximize the space as a personal assistant. And so that's the work that we do now. Outside of that, I also work as a tour manager, which is obviously a seasonal type of thing. I manage a number of tours for a number of clients at any given time.
Go ahead and name drop, Aaron.
Really?
What clients have you worked with? I'm not a name dropper either, but let the people know.
Okay, so I was the tour manager for Anita Baker and her farewell concert series.
Sweet love.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And I also worked with Kev on stage on the Real Comedians of Social Media tour. And I also currently still work with the rapper Lecrae. I work as his assistant tour manager. And then there are some other clients here or there that I do some work with, some one-offs with every now and again. So whenever, you know, a standing tour manager isn't available, then, you know, a client can call me, and, you know, if I'm not available, we'll source somebody or send somebody out to them to be able to fill in for the tour manager who is the standing person in that position.
Awesome. All right, so let's keep going,
sure,
Aaron. So, as I said earlier, Thrive stands for the hardworking, resilient, innovative, viable entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And I love in your description that you said you are an entrepreneur, because that is truly what you are. Mm-hmm. I know Aaron, everyone, so he's an entrepreneur. And you know, those are one of the main things that we have to be. Sure. As artists and as creatives, I think that's something that we don't necessarily realize how much that entrepreneur word means to the development mm-hmm. and the viability and success of our career. Mm-hmm. So which one of these words do you think that you have mastered, and which one do you think you're working on?
That is a very deep question. And mm-hmm. I try to be very careful with when it comes to using the word mastery.
I'm
very careful because there's a sense of accountability that comes with that word. Mm-hmm. And so I'll say this. I know I've spent a lot of time with myself over the years, and I paid attention mm-hmm. to the work that I've done and the impact that it's created in the spaces that I've been able to contribute to. So I know for sure that I'm hardworking. I know for sure that I'm resilient. I know for sure that I'm innovative. I know for sure that I'm creating a viable solution to a problem in the industry, and I am an entrepreneur. So I'll say that I am perpetually working to master all of these items, because in doing so, I'm creating an opportunity to stay a student. Mm-hmm. And that's what's most important. All of my clients that I work with, the clients that I prefer to work with the most, are the clients who understand that they are, even though they may be at the top of their game and they may be some of the best in their industry and the best in their space, they understand that they are always learning. And I want to be in the position to make sure that I'm always learning from those around me, learning with the development of technology and you know, all the different apps that are out and available that could make life easier for somebody in my position. So, you know, as I've lived life, of course, there have been a number of challenges that I've had to overcome, and there have been a lot of setbacks that I've had. And so, you know, being resilient is, you know, an incredible part of the journey, not just mine, but mm-hmm. everyone's journey, because, you know, there's probably less than 1% of successful individuals who have never heard the word no. And you know, right. So when you hear the word no, when you are released from a position or when you experience a setback, your ability to bounce back from that is what speaks to, you know, how it's what speaks to the possibility of your success in the future. And so, yes. You know, that's something that, you know, you, even though you can work towards the mastery of resiliency, it's something that you will always have to personify, no matter what industry you work in, no matter what you choose to pursue as far as, you know, your professional career. I just use that as an example to say I'm working on all of those things, because it's what will, and even as an entrepreneur, I'm working on being a better leader, being a better entrepreneur, so that I'm making sure that mm-hmm. I'm holding myself accountable to, you know, the business of my job. You know what I mean? And so I need to make sure that my, you know, my taxes are set up for success, and then I'm able to pay my taxes when the time comes to pay them, and, you know, making sure that my accounting is all squared away, and making sure that my standing operating procedures are lined up, that my, you know, communication is, you know, on the level that attracts the clients that I want. You know what I mean? And so mm-hmm. these are all things that I have to spend a lot of time working on, so that I make sure that I'm in the best possible position to receive the success that I want to earn.
Awesome. So as all of us should hopefully be, you are a work in
progress.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love that. And you know, the resilience is kind of a word that sticks out to me as sure. well. And I love that it's kind of right in the middle, mm-hmm. because that really what holds everything together, you know, that resilience, that continuation, that not giving up, that perseverance. Absolutely. You know, mm-hmm. that's exactly what we need, because as you said, we hear no's, we hear, oh, I'm not going to have your check, or I can't pay you, mm-hmm. or, you know, you're going to have to do, you know, we always kind of, we're always in a situation, it seems, mm-hmm. you know, as an artist.
Absolutely.
So that resilience allows us to, you know, work through whatever the moment is and keep going.
Sure.
You know?
And to that point, you know, as artists, we have a very delicate, what do I want to call it? We're very delicate because our work is largely determined by whether or not someone else resonates or it resonates with someone else. So essentially, if I'm a recording artist, excuse me, and I put out an album that nobody likes, it's not going to lend itself towards the pinnacle of success that we determine that we want by reaching a number of people that we wanted to reach and it having the impact mm-hmm. that we want it to have. And so what do I do? Do I as an artist take that rejection, curl up in a corner and quit? Or do I keep working and keep writing and keep putting music out until something hits and takes off?
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, we deal as artists, as, you know, as, you know, dancers and background singers and musicians and, you know, writers and producers, we experience a significant more amount of rejection than most other people experience because, you know, if our artistry is not accepted for a particular opportunity, which is how we make our money, then it could have, you know, deteriorating effects on our livelihood. And so we're continuing to audition and continuing. So it's like, you know, if I'm applying for a regular 9-to-5, I go to the interview, I don't get the job, I go to another interview and then I get the job and then I'm good. But for artists, it's I go to an audition, I don't get that one. And then I go to another audition and I don't get that one. And then I go to another audition and I don't get that one. And then I go to an audition and I get it. I work for 6 months and then I have to start auditioning again. So, you know, the amount of rejection that we receive is, you know, it's pretty significant compared to most others and most other industries. And so it's really a challenge mm-hmm. to, you know, to deal with that rejection continually and to, you know, bounce back and to keep trying and to keep fighting and you know, not give up.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, why I created Thrive, because at the end of the day, we need community as
Absolutely.
Artists. You know, a lot of us can't just go talk to our parents and, you know, even complain about what we're doing, you know, because then they may have a feeling of, well, maybe you should do something else. You know, there's not a lot of support sometimes within the family. And then, you know, you go to like what I like to call the general mm-hmm. public, and you perform for these people and you really want them to have an awesome experience, mm-hmm. really be touched. But they also don't know exactly what you're doing, the work,
Absolutely.
The effort that has to come into it, the training. And then honestly, you go into auditions and they're casting directors that may not even get, you know, your artistry or where. So it's always like you're trying to fit into what people think you should
Absolutely.
Be. And then you're also trying to truly be yourself. Mm-hmm. And then you're also trying to, you know, so there's always kind of this, I guess, fitting in or trying to mold yourself into mm-hmm. what the next person needs you to be. And then you're this person. And then, you know, so if you don't have that stronghold within yourself, then you can kind of just be tossed around and flip through the air mm-hmm. and, you know, you land where you land. But you really have to create some direction for yourself because of the rejection and because of the what ifs and because of all of that uncertainty that we carry.
Definitely.
So I actually, that kind of takes us into my next question, mm-hmm. which is, if you could start your professional career over, what would you tell yourself in order to be more prepared?
That's a really good question.
Mm-hmm. What?
I would probably tell myself to surround myself with people who are better than me.
Mm-hmm.
And to surround myself with people who I look up to. I think you know, we all have things that we deal with and we all have insecurities and, you know, things that can potentially hold us back if we allow it. What I'm learning now, as a, you know, an entrepreneur in my 30s, I'm learning that who your network and who you keep around you 1,000% affect how you do what you do and whether or not it is successful. And so, you know, you want to be careful not to surround yourself with people who say they support you, but when it comes time to prove their support, they're nowhere to be found. You want to surround yourself with people who have a drive. That's what's really important, because, you know, there are a lot of people who say what they want, and, you know, I'm not going to bash millennials, but there is a clear difference between, because I am a millennial, we are millennials, just on the you know.
Yeah, we're the old millennials. Right? You know,
But there's a...
It feels weird to call myself a millennial because of what they're thought of. I'm like, I'm not totally that, but yeah, we're millennials. All right.
And, you know, I won't, like I said, I won't bash the millennials, but there is a certain level of entitlement that millennials tend to have, and, you know, even Gen Z, because of the access to information that they've been, you know, provided. And and if we're not careful, what will happen is, as opposed to surrounding ourselves with people who are better than us and who will help push us towards, you know, becoming the best version of ourselves in our art and in our personal spaces, we'll settle.
And I think that is the big thing. Number one, the young millennials, we still love you guys.
There
is a level of urgency, and I have to get this thing immediately. So the idea of hard work and resilience, they don't necessarily have those skills because everything was just handed to them. Everything was immediate. So there's no process, you know, that they've had to experience of, okay, I'm going to do this. Oh no, I failed. Oh, well, let me figure this out. Oh no, it's not, you know, everything is just given to them. So that is difficult. You know, I tell people, I've been teaching for almost 20 years now. It'll be 20 years next year. And I have just seen kids just change, you know, and what they expect from the teacher and kind of how they feel they can treat you or act, you know, in a space. And so that's why it's really important for me to not stop teaching, because actually what you find out on the back end is that a big reason that the millennials, you know, are kind of in this space is because how they're taught. And education, getting the right education, is so important. And I've just noticed there are a lot of things that we miss and just don't teach kids anymore. So we allow them to think that things should be immediate. We allow them to think that they can just say, oh, I'm the king of R&B, and they feel validated in saying that, you know. So there has to be a level of kind of breaking down. I hate to say that, you know, because I've never been a person that just wants to tear people down or create a negative energy, but it's kind of like, no, you have to really see where you are, you know, and what you haven't done and what you haven't experienced, and go to those things, you know, and allow them to help you grow. But you can't just claim this title and people just see you as
that point, there's an element there that I just want to touch on really quickly. And it's this idea of social media, you know what I mean? Because and you know, social media creates, while it, you know, it's very valuable, and, you know, it is, you know, what runs the world at this point, there is this notion that it creates as far as the immediate gratification and the immediate statistics that it provides. And so if I have a video that goes viral and millions of people across the world see my video, we determine that as the qualification to identify ourselves as the king of X, Y, or Z. And what they don't realize is, just because you had a viral video to happen, you know, in a short period of time, number one, not only does that not, you know, qualify you to claim yourself to be a king of your space. Especially sidebar, when you consider that years ago, before social media, it took years of work and time and effort. And that's why it's so important that, you know, we all, you know, watch these documentaries that like Netflix has been doing a fantastic job of, you know, putting out documentaries, especially in the entertainment space. Like, I don't know if you've seen the Quincy Jones documentary on Netflix, and it is outstanding. Like, it is, and it's something, it's like, I feel like it should be required for anybody who works in the space, in the entertainment space, to watch that documentary, to just kind of see his life and just how it's developed and how, you know, one opportunity led to the next, and, you know, how it's taken a long time in order to, for him to create this legacy that he now has as, you know, an icon in the industry. Do you know what I mean? And just his level of creativity. Right, and so, you know, because, you know, and what's changed is that now we have these, we have social media. And so we can post a video of ourselves or post a song or put a song out or whatever have you. And if it gets a lot of attention, then that's all the success that we need. But, you know, when I was on tour with Kev, he would say things that, you know, that were little, he would drop little nuggets. And one of the things that he would say was that a following does not mean community. And what we have to identify is, even though you may have 1.7 million followers, that doesn't necessarily always translate into how many of those followers will actually stop what they're doing and invest their time, invest their money, invest their energy into supporting you. Do you know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
And so when you have community, that's what makes the difference in, you know, in how successful you become. And that's where your true statistics lie. You know what I mean? And so I'm just saying that to say, you know, there's, as times have changed, yes, we use and we collect information, we collect data differently now than we did back then. And even though it took a longer period of time to achieve success back then, it is still 100% necessary to work and to build with people who are like-minded, which brings me back to my original point of, you know, surrounding myself with people and surrounding ourselves with people who get it and who are, you know, who are where we want to be. You know what I mean? That's something that's driven me my entire life. I've always, you know, hung out with people that were older than myself and, you know, people who I saw something in that I wanted for myself. I marked, you know, individuals who positioned, your husband is one of them. I marked, you know, people who were portraying this idea of excellence that I wanted to become. And then I just watched them. I studied them. And if opportunity presented itself to have a relationship with them and to build relationship with them, then I went with it. You know what I mean? And it's a very important lesson that I think we all need to make sure that we are actionizing every single day. That's my word, by the way. I create words all the time because I'm an artist.
Actualize. Oh, me too. I have my own language. But, you know, that's interesting. I'm trying to pull off of this question, but it's getting even more in depth, I believe, because another reason that I think people kind of shy away from creating that community is because of the exact reason that you said, because we're with people that you may be around, people that are older, that may have more experience than you. So that can be kind of, it can make you kind of insecure because you don't think that you're in that space. And then also, when you see friends that you have kind of, they've become your community because you're like-minded and you kind of have the same ambition. When you see them kind of reach those goals and you're in the same space as you were, you know, that can be difficult. So I think going back to actually the resilience, we have to allow ourselves to see, okay, well, this person may have gotten this job, or this person may, it may seem like their career is just kind of climbing where we're in the same space. But if that person is a part of your community, then you're proud of them. You're not even competing with that person. You know that because you're connected to that person, if they're on their way up, then you're coming too, you know, because you're like, again, you're like-minded people. You have the same ambition, you know? So I think that we have to, celebrate people when they reach those goals, as opposed to, well, what didn't I do? Well, should I have gone to the, well, if I did, if I went to that networking event, then, you know, it's kind of like we have to really just allow ourselves to be what we are, meet ourselves where we are, and just work from that point, you know? So I think it is extremely important for artists to have community, but you can't go into your community comparing, competing, and, you know, just bringing that energy into the space.
You hit the nail on the head.
Yes. And then actually, that takes me into my next question. So, you know, I think a lot of us, we could sit down around a fire and just go at it with this question. But what do you most enjoy about being in the entertainment industry? And what do you least enjoy?
Another great question. I love these questions.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll approach that question because the first thing that came to mind is, you know, working on tour. So I'll tell you a brief story. One of my first tours that I managed, I had like five jobs on the tour, and I was working on average between 18 and 20 hours a day. There were a number of days, quite a few nights on the tour where I did not sleep because of the responsibilities that I had. And so I was responsible for working with the production manager to advance all of the dates and communicate with all of the varying venues for the tour. I was responsible, and I was also working for one of the artists who was on the tour. So that was my regular job. And then the tour itself was a an added responsibility that had a separate set of responsibilities within that role. And so in addition to continuing my job as this particular artist's assistant, I was responsible for advancing all of the dates with the production manager. I was responsible for booking the travel and making sure the hospitality and all the logistics were set up for the tour. I was also responsible for setting up the merch for the artist that I was working for. Setting up the merch, training the volunteers to sell the merch for us, settling the merch at the end of the show. I was also the sponsor rep on the tour, which means that I had a whole another slew of volunteers that I was responsible for receiving and training and making sure that they did, you know, what was required for the sponsor. I was also responsible for settling the show itself after, you know, at the end of the night, once, you know, all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed, it was my responsibility to, you know, settle to, you know, handle the money, essentially. And there were a number of other responsibilities in addition to, you know, making sure that there was food every day to eat, making sure that there was some place for everybody to shower, making sure that I was maintaining the schedule, communicating with, you know, the bus driver and the truck driver and making sure that they had their what they needed. And so I was literally working between 18 and 20 hours a day. And what got me, what gave me the strength and the what gave me the joy and working that hard was coming out. Once the show started, I would always be, you know, backstage in the production office or backstage doing something, working on whatever have you. And I would always come out during the performance and I would look around the room and I would see the excitement on everyone's faces. I would see the smiles and just feel the energy. And that became what drove me. It's what drives me to this day. So when I'm, you know, whenever I'm working and no matter how busy I am, I always try to find a moment to go out into the audience and look and just soak up the energy of everyone's excitement to be in the presence of, you know, these artists that they love and admire and have respected for so long, and to just see that. That's what drives my passion for the industry, being able to contribute to the artist's success of getting them to the stage and all that it takes in order to get them to the stage. Because all, you know, as an attendee, you show up and you experience the concert and then you go home, you know, for those of us who work in the industry.
Like the most work you do, you may have to stand in line.
At the very most, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or stand in line again to buy it, to buy merch or to buy a drink or whatever, you know? But, you know, for those of us who are behind the scenes, it takes months of preparation, sometimes years of preparation, in order to set up that one event, depending on how big the event is and who it's for and, you know, all of the different moving parts and everything. And then once the event is over, it's not over. It's, you know, we have to wrap everything up, and then we have to, you know, tie up all the loose ends that are still hanging. And then we have to go and do it again on the in the next city.
You know what I mean? And so, and you know, that's what, I know we're talking about what we enjoy about the entertainment industry, but that is something that I kind of enjoy as well. Like everything, all of this stuff that goes on behind the scenes that people don't even consider to create a show for them. You know, like I think about when I was on my first tour, we were in a different city probably every night. Like we may sit in cities for two or three nights, depending on where we were. But, you know, we would wake up in the morning, travel, maybe have time to sit down in the hotel and be a normal person. And then we were off to our show. And then we may have a little time to sleep, or we may travel right after the show. You know, so we were, I basically lived on a bus almost 2 years, and people don't think about like, oh, wow, they've been traveling. And now all of a sudden they have to like, give me this awesome show. You know, they just come, the audience just to comes city, and they want to their enjoy. One show. Right. And so, you know, that's just, there's a whole show going on to get to the show. You know,
Yeah, that's it.
And so that can go ahead.
And I was just going to say, that's something that most people don't ever consider, even though like you hear this idea of a tour, and it, for those who don't tour, it's just an idea. You don't necessarily understand. It doesn't immediately resonate that you, when you're like, you're on tour, and that means that you're away from your family, you're away from your normal life, you're away from, you know, all of the things that help you be the person that you are, and you're sacrificing all of that for their benefit to participate in a show that they're going to walk away from and hopefully remember for the rest of their life. You know what I mean? And so just like you mentioned, there are so many different elements that people just don't know to consider. All we want is to show up and to experience the show, and it better be a good show because of how much money I paid. And you know what I mean? And as long as as long as they're content with it, they go home and they get back in their bed, and then they get up and go to work the next day, or get up and go to brunch the next day, and they're on with their lives, and they're not thinking about the fact that we have to drive through the night to make sure that we're at the venue, the next venue in the morning, to set up the show for the next day. You know what I mean? And so it's something that's not considered all the time, but for those of us who are in it, it's definitely something that we have to live with. It's a choice that we make. And, you know, and if it's not for the right reasons, if it's not for the passion, it's not for, because it's something that you enjoy, then yeah, it's not for you. It shouldn't be anyway, you know, so, and yes, the money can be great, depending on, you know, the circumstances and the situations, every situation is different, but you know, but it's, it, you know, it, when we have the opportunity to do what we love and make money doing it so that we can provide for ourselves and our families, it is a blessing, but there are, circumstances and there are stakes that are really high, because of, and then, you know, not to switch gears, but we haven't even talked about, you know, just the cultural and the racial tension and the political tension that exists in the world, and how we're literally putting ourselves on the line every single day and putting ourselves at risk to, you know, be targeted. You know what I'm saying? With all the mass shootings and the mass shootings that have happened at festivals and at concerts, and you know what I mean? Like, you know, that's something else that people don't think about. I have to think about those things as a tour manager, because one of my responsibilities is, you know, to ensure the safety of the people that I'm touring with. You know what I mean? Even though I'm not security, it's a part of the job. It's a part of my job to communicate with, you know, if we're traveling with security or if we're not, if we're dependent on the security at the venue or the security that the promoter provides, it's my responsibility to communicate, you know, what the plan is if something were to happen. And it's, you know, I take my security meetings very seriously because, you know, we have to in the day and age that we live in. And, you know, a lot of people don't even think about that. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I'm just saying all that to say it's, you know, yes, we're very fortunate to be able to do, to get paid to do what we love. And there are, you know, there are moments that, you know, that I enjoy, that I significantly enjoy. But at the end of the day, the choice that I made and the choice that I continue to make as I continue to grow in this industry is to do what I can to provide a level of peace for the people that I support on the road, and to provide an experience, because, you know, in serving them, they're providing an experience that will, at the end of the day, encourage and lift and brighten someone else's day, everybody in the audience. And so that's what really, that's what I enjoy the most about being on the road and about, you know, doing what I do. The thing that I least enjoy is probably the challenge that's associated with, and I'll probably touch on this a little bit later, but the challenge that's associated with self and the boundaries around taking care of self while having to take care of everyone else. And so as a tour manager, you're basically a parent on tour with, you know, a bunch of different, I don't want to belittle, you know, anybody by calling them kids, but it's basically kind of the analogy. That's the analogy that I, that's,
yeah,
that's
just, yeah, you know, totally. What I mean? You're taking care,
I'm taking
of
care
people.
Of people who, you know, may not necessarily be equipped with the information that's necessary in order to take care of themselves, because they are, you know, hired contractors for the job that they're doing. And, you know, it's just that I'm the one responsible for making sure that they're in the position to, you know where they're going to be, so that they can communicate that to their loved ones or whatever have you, and to know how things are going to be set up so that they can determine what's best for their livelihood, you know, while they're on the road. And so that it's my responsibility to take care of everyone else. And so what the challenge that creates is, do I prioritize taking care of everyone else above myself, or do I take a moment to take care of myself and do what serves me, sacrificing whatever may happen in the moment that I choose to take care of myself, for the sake of making sure that I'm in the best possible position to serve anyone. And then that's a mistake that I've made, you know, in the past. I would prioritize everyone else and think about what everybody else needs and not take care of myself. And what it ended up doing was it ended up making me bitter, because I was serving from an empty cup. I was serving from a cup that was, you know, at most half full. And you legitimately can't take care of anybody else if you're not taking care of yourself. And so there are tours that, you know, that I've worked that have been very challenging personally, like as far as, you know, interacting with, you know, the people that I'm on the road with, because I wasn't in the mindset of taking care of myself and doing what I could to serve me. And I'm too busy taking care of them. Like there was this one period of time where I was legitimately responsible for three tours at the same time and traveling sporadically on all three of them. So bouncing, leaving one city with one tour and traveling to another city for another tour, just to come back to, you know, the tour that I just left, and then going to another tour with, you know, or another, you know, another tour with another client from the other two tours. And it was there was a period of months that this persisted. And, you know, granted, you know, I am Jamaican, so we work, you know, we got to have 3, 4, 5 jobs in order to not be considered lazy in our culture. But at what expense? And for me, it was the expense of sacrificing 100% of myself to where I'm giving to the point where I had nothing left to give. And so it made me start to resent and be bitter towards the people that I was with, because I'm overextending myself to give them and take care of them and serve everything that they need. And they're not even caring. At least that's the perception. They're not caring about how much time and effort and energy I have to give to them, because...
Well, you know, if I can pop in, I think that's one of the things about certain roles that we take
sure.
on, you know, because you, as the tour manager, like you just said, you're kind of babysitting. So there are certain things as the tour manager that people just assume, oh, they'll take
absolutely.
Care of it. Oh, they'll handle this. Oh, they'll do that. And then they don't realize that maybe that's something they could
do. Oh my gosh.
You know, or or maybe you're bogged down by your work and the thing that they're asking you is not your gig. So, you know, and so I think that definitely, and especially something that I want to inspire with Thrive is creating that balance.
Absolutely.
That's why we have a focus on total wellness, because that's something that I had to learn as well, because it's funny, we're the older millennials, mm-hmm. you know? So we do have that mindset of, oh, I got to work. Mm-hmm. I just got to buckle down and I have to do this, and I can't go spend time with my friends because I didn't finish this. And then I can't pay this bill right now because of it. You know, there's always so much that we're trying to balance. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we're not necessarily taught either in our training, is how to balance that out, how to give time and space for yourself, how to rejuvenate yourself, because we do pour out of ourselves
so
and everyone just takes, mm-hmm. takes. That's a big thing that I learned as a teacher. You know, I give to my students and give. If they don't pour back in me, or if I don't find a way to get filled back up, I have nothing to give mm-hmm. them. You know, so that is extremely important, that we create balance in our own lives. And I think that's why the entrepreneur word is so important, because if you're managing your business yep. in the way you should, mm-hmm. if you have everything laid out and organized and planned, then you're working that balance into your life. Into your lifestyle, into your schedule, you know, you're creating space for you to just breathe and sit down.
So good.
and not feel that stress of, oh, but I didn't do this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's always, because we are always going to auditions, or we're always looking for another gig, mm-hmm. or there's always this work that we have to do to get the next gig. So I think that we kind of beat ourselves up when we just sit down and allow ourselves to rest.
Absolutely.
But we don't realize that's exactly what we need to get to the next thing.
Absolutely. I couldn't say any of that better myself.
Yeah. So it's just extremely important that you take care, you know, self-care. So that, again, that's something that I really want to focus on with Thrive, is just, how do we take care of ourselves while also putting the effort and energy into our artistry that we need to do, while also just being regular, normal people?
Definitely.
Just ask you, what do you see yourself doing in the next 6 months or 3 months or 3 weeks or whatever it is? And how do you see yourself accomplishing this vision? Have you laid out a plan? Are you contacting people? How are you working towards your next goal for the next few months?
That's a good question. I'll be a little transparent here. My goal for the next 6 months is more personal than it is professional, because what I recognize is, considering the nature of my work, my professional success can be significantly inhibited by my personal failures. And so what I'm working on right now is I am completely revamping my identity, in the sense of I am there, like, you know, the work that I've done up until this point, while it may have created a certain level of success, I have not mm-hmm. done the best job of taking care of myself and prioritizing myself in the professional spaces that I encounter. And so what I'm working on right now is I am working on cleaning my system from my mind to my body to my network. I'm working on completely shutting down everything that I've done up until this point that has produced the resentment that I once carried, and I'm working on rebuilding myself so that I can in the future be in the position to serve with from a full glass as opposed to an empty glass. And so I am, you know, seeing a therapist consistently in order to help, you know, take care of the thoughts and the feelings that I have, and making sure that I'm getting my mind right. I am also doing a physical cleanse, and I'm working with one of my very close friends from college who started a men's wellness club in Atlanta, which is where I live. And it's basically it's kind of like a country club hybrid with a doctor's office for men only. And what they do essentially is they run tests, run physical tests to calculate your bio wellness age. And that's basically the age at which your body perceives that it is aging, based on, you know, the type of fat you have in your body, the type of whatever's in your blood, and just, you know, all of the tests. They do a full body scan to collect the information that's necessary in order to determine what that age is. And when they told me what my bio wellness age was, I immediately knew that there was something that I needed to do in order to reverse it. And so I'm in the middle of actionizing, there's my word again, this plan to reverse my bio wellness age, which means that, and all that basically means is that I'm following a regimen that puts me first. So I'm, you know, consuming a certain number of calories per day so that I can, you know, lose some of the excess weight that I've gained, because being on the road, it's very difficult to eat healthy. As a sidebar.
Yes, yes.
But I'm doing that, and then I'm doing, you know, a hormone replacement therapy, and I'm making sure that I'm, you know, being as active as I can, and following the guidelines of, you know, what the doctor has encouraged me to do in order to be physically active, and I'm doing everything that I can to make myself healthier, so that I am so that the opportunities that present themselves in the future, I can go into those opportunities closer to the best version of myself that will allow me to be able to succeed. And so I deleted all my social media because I don't want to be poisoned by the toxicity of comparison, and not allowing myself. I don't want to see anything that anybody else is doing. I want to take this time to really focus on me. At one point, I deleted Instagram altogether. Then I had to re-download it, and, you know, just log in under my business page. What I did was I cleaned out the whole business page. I archived most of the posts and deleted a lot of the posts, unfollowed a number of people, and just to limit what I'm able to see when I log in. And I, you know, only follow clients and people who are going to be helpful to my spiritual development, to my mental development. So that way, when I log in, that's the first thing that I see. And so that's what I'm working on. I'm working on me. In the next 6 months, I'm planning on being better than I am today. I plan on being better than I was when I, you know, served on the last few tours that I served on. And I'm working on doing what I can to better myself.
Awesome. So I always write down quotes. Mm-hmm. And one fun thing that I wanted to do with the podcast is just kind of throw out a quote to people that I'm interviewing, and just see what, just kind of let you riff off that thought, and just see where we land, what we come up with. So the quote for you, sir, is only what I have right now is what I will use to do what I can.
I love that.
Thank you, darling. So I'm going to say it again so you can kind of let the idea sink in.
Yes, please.
Only what I have right now is what I will use to do what I can. Go ahead and speak on that, brother.
That is so good. And it speaks exactly to where I am. What we have the tendency to do, unfortunately, because like we mentioned earlier, a lot of our work is dependent on whether or not people like us and whether or not people like our content. We have the tendency to mold and shift ourselves and just shift, you know, who we are for the work that we have to put forth. And what's a challenge is to remember that who we are today is enough to do everything that we need to do. And who we are can obviously be synonymous with this idea of what we have in our hands. So, you know, what we have in front of us today is enough to get us through today. And then when we go to sleep tonight and we wake up tomorrow morning, we will have enough to get us through the day. And so when people say, how are you doing? One of my favorite responses to that is, I am literally taking one day at a time, because there's, and that, because yes, I may have a goal for 3 or 5 or 6 months from now, but tomorrow's not promised to any of us. And so why not just focus our energy in being the best possible version of ourselves that we can today, using what we have in our hands today, and letting that be enough to get us to where we need to be in the future.
I love that. And that goes back to that self-care that we're both trying to implement, and that I hope everyone's kind of trying to implement. What do I have to give today?
Absolutely.
And I'm just going to give that and not try to give more and not put pressure on myself to do more. It's what I have today.
That's it.
I love that, Aaron. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Definitely.
Well, do you have anything else that you would like to share with the people? Where can we find you? What are you doing? Do you have anything, any lines to draw?
Sure. I'll leave this with you all and everyone who's listening. There is in this space that I'm currently in, there is something that I heard on Oprah's podcast recently that has really stuck with me, and it's become a daily mantra, if you will. It is simply this: I exist, therefore I am valuable. It's a very complicated thing to determine that your value is based on who you've worked with or the work that you've done. And it's very easy, you know, I hate name dropping, you know what I mean? Like, I prefer for nobody to know, like a lot of the most successful tour managers in the world are not on social media at all. You know what I mean? And so, granted, I'm trying to build a business and I'm trying to build a brand that's reputable. And so there's a need for me to be on social media. But what's also challenging is it's very easy to use the people that I've worked with and to use their success and their reputation and my relationship with them to validate my existence. And that's not okay. The belief has to be, and this is what I'm working on changing my belief to: I exist, therefore I am valuable. So regardless of who I've worked with, regardless of, you know, how successful my tours have been, regardless of who wants me and who doesn't want me, the fact that I can stand in a room and be present is enough to validate my value and what I contribute to the space that I find myself in. For no other reason than the fact that I am there with the people that I'm there with, and engaging and interacting with the people that are a part of, the space with me. I exist, therefore I am valuable. And that's something that I'm literally saying to myself every single day, in addition to standing in the mirror and saying, I love you. Because it's a very difficult thing to, like, for me, my mom, God rest her soul, she was one of the most kind and loving people on the planet. And, you know, she also had the other side to her, where if you crossed her, then you knew it and everybody else knew it. And I have that same energy. It's very easy for me because I have a heart of compassion. It's very easy for me to see the need of love in others and to provide that. You know, I have, you know, my male friends will tell you, I disrupt social norms all the time. So I tell my male friends that I love them, and I've always been that way.
Right.
So for some of my friends, it's taken years for them to come back and say, you know what, I love you too, bro. You know what I mean? But because that's who I am, and I know that that's who I am, I don't allow the response to stop me from being who I am. Why? Because when you know better, you do better. When you know who you are, you can be who you are. Right. And you have to hold yourself accountable to what you know of yourself. And so, if I know that my heart is full of compassion and that I am here to love, then that's what I'm going to do. The challenge that creates is that love has, for me, it's been focused outward for so long. Mm-hmm. And what I'm having to do now is I'm having to refocus that love inward and say, I just, like, you know, Will Smith posted this on his Insta story some time ago. He was talking about discipline, self-discipline. And, you know, he was saying that self-discipline is you saying to yourself, I love you too much to put this in my body. I love you too much to eat this pizza. I love you too much to, you know, do these drugs or to overconsume alcohol or to do whatever it is I love you too much to not go to the gym and to not work out. You know what I mean? And so mm-hmm. and it's a principle that I'm living by, because when you are able to truly love yourself, it means that there are certain things that you're not going to tolerate because you love yourself. You know what I mean? And so I'm hoping that, you know, these podcasts that I'm listening to and these nuggets that I've been picking up on my journey, I'm hoping that as it's been shared with me and resharing it, and just attaching a little bit of my personal story behind it, that it triggers something in someone else to say, you know what, that's a principle that I need to live by. That's an idea and a concept that I need to employ as I pursue my success and as I pursue my future. And so I'm hoping that that's something that will resonate with people as they continue to pursue. So if you want to, you know, be a part of my journey, my business page on Instagram, again, I'm personally not on Instagram right now, although if and when I return, you know, my personal page was, you know, at always Aaron A. But the business page, which you can find right now, is Accessible LLC, and that's Accessible LLC. And that's also the website, accessiblellc.com. You can follow my Instagram. Also, it's the same thing on Twitter and Facebook, although you probably won't find my Facebook page right now because it's all deactivated.
gotcha.
But yeah, you can follow me. And then, if you're interested in becoming an apprentice with Accessible, then you can send an email to info@accessiblellc.com. And someone from my team will get back to you. We'll do our research and figure out who you are, what makes you work, what makes you fit with what we're trying to do. And we'll be able to take it from there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Aaron. So give us that quote again, because I love it. And I think just like you, if we can implement that in our lives on a daily basis, just what that will do to our spirit and our psyche and just continuing on and remaining resilient. So give Absolutely. It to us one more time.
I exist, therefore I am valuable.
Let's just say that all together, everyone. I exist.
Therefore
I am valuable.
Yes, indeed.
I felt it. And I hope you all said it. And I hope you all did too. So Aaron, thank you so, so much for being my very first interview on the Thrive Podcast.
Thank Amazing. You. Thank you so much for having me.
There's the applause sign. The crowd goes wild. I definitely think we had, there were a lot of little nuggets in there for everyone. So I hope that something in this interview resonated with you. I hope that you are inspired. I hope that you are motivated. And I hope that you know that you got this. All right, everyone, catch us the next time on Thrive Podcast. And everyone, have a great day. Thanks, folks.